in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today on the program, we speak with Marvel writer Brian Reed, who gives us an update on three projects that he's got in the works. Ms. Marvel, which has a big character change in the lead, as the death of Carol Danvers was portrayed in the last issue, and we see the mantle of Ms. Marvel being turned over to Carla Soffer, Moonstone. We also talk about his upcoming arc on Dark Reign called The Sinister Spider-Man, as Matt Gargan, Venom, takes over the role of Peter Parker to the public's eye. And the new crossover with the old 2099 universe, they're getting a rewash on Time Storm 2099. Brian drops a few hits of storylines to come in all of those, and also talks about another project he has in the works that will probably be announced later this summer. But right now, our conversation begins with the big changes happening in Ms. Marvel.
I suppose we should start with Ms. Marvel because that is the event of the moment. The death of Carol Danvers. You kept saying in articles leading up to this, hey, we're not kidding. She's really going to die. She's gone.
Yep.
And now Moonstone takes over.
Yep. And now she's dead and everyone hates me.
Well, I mean, it is interesting coming off of House of M. You know, everything that's happened to Ms. Marvel very quickly in 2 years. And, you know, it has been a fun and interesting ride. And I think we've been seeing the best that Carol Danvers has ever been.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. No, I think definitely. And I think, you know, she's never been more on center stage and you know, an important lieutenant to Iron Man and the whole Secret Invasion and everything that's come out of Mighty Avengers. So that's been cool. And then in addition, yeah, I mean, I was bummed before the death arc started. I was looking forward to Carol and Peter kind of maybe getting together. I thought that was kind of neat that Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel might actually have a thing.
You know what the best part of that was that I didn't know it was coming when I wrote it. And I just wrote that line of dialogue for Spider-Man of, well, we have to go out on a date. And I was like, where the hell did that come from?
I like it.
Yeah.
Too
and
bad.
So I kept it in there, and it's been this huge thing with everybody. Like, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen?
Well, now it's got it. Well, I'm sure he'll be aware that Moonstone clearly isn't Ms. Marvel. That's too bad.
Yeah, now it might be creepy.
All right, that's fair. And you know, I checking in and checking out. It was only until Ms. Marvel that I was pleased to see Rick Mason, the agent, come back because I remember, damn, 20 years ago when that first graphic novel came out. Mm-hmm. Was that your invention to put him in the series, or did you...
It was last summer. I think I might have been at the Chicago Con.
Okay.
Wizard World Chicago, and was roaming the aisles looking for stuff, and I saw that graphic novel, and I vaguely remembered a friend of mine having it when we were kids. And so I just bought it, like, on this weird nostalgia trip. and I'm reading it on the plane on the way home, and I'm like, oh my God, this is really cool.
Absolutely.
And I guess he had been back for a bit, a couple of times in some other Marvel books, but hadn't been back that often. And so when I asked if I could use him, they said, yeah, he's available. And I had already been kind of planning the Ascension arc, and I wasn't all together yet. And as soon as I had the chance to use Rick, all of a sudden I kind of had the audience who could come in and like be the person that everybody explained everything to. And Rick just clicked right into that role. And then by the end of the arc, Rick was just taking over. And
very
it was
cool.
A lot of fun.
Excellent, man. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to him avenging Carol's death and everything now. I'm assuming that his role in the book is not over.
Yeah, he's still out there.
Excellent. Very cool. And what do you like switching to Moonstone and writing about her as opposed to the fun that you've obviously had writing Carol Danvers all this time?
Carol has always been that part of us that we all want to do a good job. And maybe sometimes you've got a task at hand that you're not entirely sure you're up to. And this might be entirely like a creative person thing, because every creative person I know, every writer, every artist, all of us, we are completely fueled by self-doubt. and it's this constant belief that someone's going to figure out I'm not qualified for this job and take it away from me. And it's been really fun to play with that attitude with her of just, I mean, she's totally at the top of her game. And she knows she's out there doing this high wire act, and if I screw up, people are going to die. And it's been this thing of like her realizing too, you know, like she's been B-list for so many years because she hasn't brought her full game. And so that was the really fun story to tell with her, was have her going, wow, you know, I've not been doing everything I could do. I need to start doing that. And then being worried all along, maybe I'm still not doing enough. Maybe I'm not doing it right. And that just that goal to be the best is just this thing that can kill you if you let it. And I guess it did now that I've said that.
I like the risks that are being taken here. And I think Marvel has had difficulty with legacies and maybe passing a superhero legacy. And maybe, you know, this is going to be interesting. Certainly turning it over to a villain.
You know, I've set this story up, and it had one ending, but I realize if I give it this other ending where we just get Carol completely out of the picture, we've got a whole new game we can play.
Yeah.
And that was, I bounced it off Steve Wacker, and he said, that is fantastic, do it.
Cool. Well, does this, you know, I mean, does the job maybe change Moonstone a bit? I mean, you know, I mean, are we going to see a little bit of that, or, I mean, you know, or is this a dark person that's going to be pretending to be good? And like you said, the
first issue that completely focuses on her is actually the government has asked for a psychiatrist to come in and do a psych eval of everyone on the Avengers. And it's just them wanting to make sure they've got good people on the jobs. And Norman comes to her and goes, look, you know, I want you to go in there because I would rather have a psychiatrist talk to the psychiatrist first.
Absolutely.
And the whole arc is really a big, deep look inside what makes Carla Sofen. And it was a lot of me figuring out who she was as a person and what the book was about now.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it was like really surprising because I realized that we get to be a really dark story for a little while.
Much like your turn on Captain Marvel, the prelude to Secret Invasion, or during the beginnings of Secret Invasion, here again is this who am I question.
I think it's a huge thing when you've got characters that lead two lives. Is, you know, who am I really? And that came from growing up a huge Spider-Man fan. Was, you know, when did Peter Parker stop and Spider-Man begin?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for me, that is the essence of superheroes. I mean, that's what makes Superman cool. If I was writing Superman, that's the story we'd be seeing. like, when do I stop doing this and start doing that? And, yeah, it's and now when you've got bad guys playing good guys playing themselves, playing, you know, like it's now just layers upon layers of really great stuff.
Well, and I think, again, I keep bringing this up to every Marvel writer I speak to. I like Dark Reign because clearly each character that is the lead character of a book can plug into this event and have their own individual journey. And mm-hmm. I think that's what makes this event different than a lot of others. I think that's there seems to be a clearer path in my eyes as a reader to, you know, their motivations, how they specifically tie into the story in a way that the other heroes or other lead characters don't.
You don't feel as much like it's, okay, this is the issue where the hero fights bad guy X.
Yep.
And oh, look, that was the tie-in. And now it's back to the status quo. I agree with you. I think it's very organic and very nice.
Assess your own evolution since first starting to write comics and stuff and your level of comfort and, you know, what little things maybe were challenging at first and now, you know, the process is easier. Can you cite any of that?
You know, what's really funny is, I've told Vanita Rogers before when we were talking that, you know, I'm the first person to admit that maybe those first six issues of Ms. Marvel ain't the best comic books ever written. And really, I think you can really kind of watch my arc there through those first, like, 6 to 12 issues of learning to do my job.
Okay.
And thank God Marvel let me do that, but it really was, you know, like, shove me out on the stage and learn to sing. And now it's, what's interesting is back then I had such a hard time understanding character, and it sounds like such a basic building block, and I guess it really is, but it was so much easier for me to write the action scenes, and it was like, okay, now we're going to blow stuff up for 6 pages, and then I can figure out how to make somebody emote a feeling.
Well, maybe coming from your computer game background.
That was entirely it.
Sure.
And it was a crutch I leaned on at first, and then it became, now, it's really hard to write the fight scenes for me. Now I can do pages and pages of characters. But, like, I've spent the weekend killing myself on this Time Storm book, which is X-Men 2099 fighting, like, 10,000 Hulks.
Yeah, I saw your Twitter about that, so that was very cool.
And it seems like this should be the thing of, like, oh, well, there's 22 pages, done. Like, fight, 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 done. And instead I spent all weekend long going, I don't know, God.
Excellent. I want to talk about the 2099 stuff that you got coming up, but I want to stay in Dark Reign for a second.
Yeah.
and switch to the Sinister Spider-Man.
Yes.
And that's cool. And I, you know, those Dark Reign one-shot ads that they're populating through the books and stuff, they look very cool.
They're fantastic.
And, and certainly the one promoting yours, Peter, half his mask is torn away. He's on the floor, and Venom is, you know, running around in the black outfit. And as far as everyone else is concerned, as you said about Ms. Marvel, this is Spider-Man.
Yeah, and there's a big tonal difference between the two books, whereas Ms. Marvel is continuing to be, you know, very, very serious, very straightforward. You know, there's a bad guy in charge here. Sinister Spider-Man is a bad joke that I think has gone too far, and someone approved it.
Okay.
It's Tom Brennan, who's one of the editors for the Spider-Man group, and I were talking about it, and he asked if I would be interested in writing a story focusing on Mac. And as we kind of knocked the idea back and forth, it turned into this thing that has become Sinister Spider-Man. And I forget who said it in the process of the conversation, but they said, this needs to be a fractured fairy tale. This needs to be the Spider-Man book, but with starring Mac Gargan. And who would Peter be if he had no responsibility, and he still had all of that power? And that's what this started turning into. And Fraction pointed out to me that I'm the first Marvel writer in history to actually be paid to write the sentence, Spider-Man is getting a lap dance.
Very nice. Nothing wrong with that, man. That's cool. Well, okay, so he will be obviously then traipsing around the Spider-Man universe, pretending and running into, I'm sure, recognizable players in the Spider-Man world.
People think he is Spider-Man, and he's going to be encountering... It is a Spider-Man book without Peter Parker. We are going to see the staff of the DB. We're going to see the Dark Avengers. We're going to see all the corners of Spider-Man's world, but we're going to see them from this guy who the world thinks is Spider-Man. And so it's playing with everybody's expectations of what they're looking at and being really darkly humorous with it at the same time.
Well, you know, are there members of the Dark Avengers that we should be linking to Ms. Marvel and Venom as far as, you know, other team members and stuff? I mean, I really liked in Brian's last issue of Dark Avengers, I enjoyed the conversation between Norman and Sentry. I thought that was pretty neat. Are there going to be any type of, you know, are there partners involved or, you know, another immediate hero that they're going to be playing off of in either of the coming stories you got?
The big problem for Mac with his life as Spider-Man is that when Norman first got them all the jobs as the Avengers, he's got them all together and goes, none of you talk to the press, none of you leave the tower, you all behave.
Right.
Mac has just instantly decided, you know what, it's not like you can replace me. And there ain't that many other Spider-Men running around you can go grab, so I'm going to do what I want.
Very cool.
And so there's a real animosity between him and Norman. And it's really unfortunate because the plot of Sinister Spider-Man hinges on something that hasn't happened in Amazing Spider-Man yet.
I see.
So we can't get too deep into what Mac does. But Mac starts doing something that really pisses Norman off. And so Mac is going to have to be dealing with the city of New York and Norman and this other thing that he's cooking up and dealing with it all at once.
I'm curious about what's coming up in this 2099 crossover that you've got going, and what can you tell us about the story in general terms?
Time Storm 2099 is the present-day Marvel slamming headlong into the future Marvel, and the idea kind of came about mostly because the numbers were fun, 2009, 2099.
Sure.
As we got talking about it and I read through a bunch of comics, I came back to Bill Roseman and said, you know, I think the nuggets here are really good. There's, you know, these characters are still a lot of fun, but we've really kind of got to update it. And one of the things we talked about was, you know, like all science fiction eventually shows its age. And like some of the names of companies in the original 2099 books were Pixel Corporation, which sounded really cool in 1993. And it's, you know, somebody's going to come back to my book in 15 years and go, oh, my God.
Sure.
Look at this. This has not aged well. And I'm fine with that. That's the danger of writing science fiction unless your name is Douglas Adams, I guess.
Yeah, really. Here, here.
And even then, my iPhone is kind of my Hitchhiker's Guide now.
You know, I've loved people who have made that connection, and they're absolutely right. It's hilarious and true.
It's what mine is called when it connects to my Mac. It's a sync the Hitchhiker's Guide, and you go, yes.
Too bad that narrator passed away. He could, like, make a fortune doing ringtones for people and stuff like that. No?
Oh, we've still got Stephen Fry, who did the movie. So.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good. Did you like the Hitchhikers movie on a tangent?
You know, I liked three quarters of it. The third act kind of went off the rails, but the rest of it I had fun.
See, I more so than Watchmen, I feel more tainted by all the past Hitchhiker product that by the time of the movie, I really was like, this sucked. And
yeah.
I was just really disappointed. And even the crappy 80s TV version is hilarious. I mean,
it's really good.
You know, it's that line, and I'm on the right line that says, hey, I love Doctor Who from the 70s. I can appreciate the rubber suits and, you know, just appreciate the stories and not worry so much about how bad the costumes looked.
Yeah.
And the Hitchhikers is in the same way. I just thought the writing is awesome, and it's so tight and fast. And then to impose that romance in the film just really bummed me out. And really, Alan Rickman, who I was looking forward to as Marvin, can't hold a candle to the original guy.
Yeah, and the whole John Malkovich plot in the movie was really where I got lost. The stuff that was really loyal to the book was stuff that I was like, you know, this is good. I liked the cast. I thought it was a good Arthur. I thought it was a good Ford. I've got a horrible crush on Zooey Deschanel, just
we
like everyone else does.
Absolutely. She's a doll.
And so in that respect, I really enjoyed it. But I got to be honest, too, I haven't watched it once since I watched it the first time, so clearly I didn't love it that much.
I will admit, though, on YouTube, I'll every now and then listen to that great song that I guess came from the stage play of So Long and Thanks for All the Fish.
Yes.
And that's the thing. It started off so good. I'm like, oh, man, you know, that was my thing, seeing Watchmen at WonderCon. They showed us the first 20 minutes at the panel.
Yeah.
And people are like, what did you think? And I'm like, well, I thought it looked great, but, you know, the first 10 minutes of Hitchhikers was good, too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you never know. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah, I know. Massive tangent. Sorry about that.
There we go.
Back to 29, but that's the show.
Thanks for listening, kids.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's why half of them tune into Word Balloon, my man. But no, back to 2099. Back to the future.
Yes, back to the future. It really just became this desire of mine to update it and give it the way I pitched it was, let's do what they did with New Universal and with Ultimate. And let's give this to a new audience. Because the fans of 2099 are going to come back and they're going to find things they know and they're going to see that, you know, like, I did treat the idea with respect. I was a fan of 2099. I wouldn't want to come back and go, oh, look, Spider-Man's a girl and he wears a dress. And, you know, like, they clearly just tried to market this to someone. And, no, I wanted it to be loyal, but I wanted it to be new and really kind of breathe some life into it and try to get a few years out of it, if nothing else.
Will some of the designs then change as well as, you know, some of the facts about the past?
The facts are almost entirely new, to be totally honest.
Okay.
We still see names we recognize. Alchemax, the big evil corporation from the first one, is still there. You know, Spider-Man is still wearing the Rick Leonardi costume.
Which is a very cool costume, yeah.
Which is a fantastic costume. And what's funny is, as we were talking about characters we wanted to give a spit polish to, everybody's lists that they put down ideas are like, well, we could do this to Ghost Rider, and we could do this to Cerebra. We're not touching Spider-Man. We could do this to...
Sure, sure.
And like, to a man, everybody's list said that.
It was a great... I really thought it was a great design. How about Doom? Because Doom had a real Transformers kind of look to his costume back in the day.
Can't get too far into Doom because it'll spoil part of the plot about Doom. Doom turns out to be very important.
All right.
Our real lead characters are going to be, from the 2099 side, we have Punisher, Spider-Man, Human Torch, and Cerebra are really the ones that are there in issue one and they're there in issue four and they're who we're following.
Excellent.
From the present day side, we're really following Spider-Man and Wolverine, although most of the new Avengers end up making cameos as well as some of the Dark Avengers.
Now, how long is this arc going to be?
This is technically six issues. But only four of them are called Time Storm. So what happens is Time Storm 1 and 2 come out, and they're starting up our big event. And then we're kind of taking an aside. We're keeping the big event propelled forward, but we're really stopping to just focus on Spider-Man for an issue. And then we're spending an issue just focusing on Wolverine and X-Men 2099. And then we're coming back to Time Storm 3 and 4.
Okay.
So it's all one big piece, but we're letting you know when you pick this up, Time Storm Spider-Man... You know, if you're really into that subplot about Wolverine, you're not going to see it in this book. And when you pick up the X-Men book, hey, there's not going to be any Spider-Man 2099 here, just letting you know.
Very interesting. Okay. And this starts this week?
You know, I just looked at the Marvel website, and it says April 8th. But
okay.
I had it in my head it was out this week, so
oh, no
maybe
worries.
Something slipped.
All right. Well, there we go. And they'll be checking.
I never know when anything is until I go into the comic book shop. So.
No, I understand that, man. Well, now, and who's drawing the series now for this?
This is Eric Battle.
Okay. Excellent. And you were saying we had a technical glitch, and you were telling me that Eric, way back in the day, was working on the 2099 books.
That was my understanding, yeah, was that he did something with one of the original 2099s. But, you know, I understand a lot of things that aren't right, so.
That's cool. You know, and I didn't ask you before. Tell us who's drawing Sinister Spider-Man for you.
That's going to be Chris Bacalo.
Very cool.
And yeah, tell me.
Yeah, seriously, man. No, you've been very fortunate. I think you've hooked up with a lot of great artists since doing your various books for Marvel. And I really like the Captain Marvel miniseries. I really enjoyed
that. Lee Weeks was just brought his A game and made me look better. that's all you can ask for from your artist is make it look like I know what I'm doing.
Well, and it's funny too because you say that you have trouble now writing action scenes. It doesn't show on the paper because it seems to me that a lot of your stuff has. Very
I get it together before I send the script out.
Okay, there you go. You're able to slap yourself into shape. Attaboy.
Yeah, so like I can sit down and I can crank out, you know, 10 pages of Wolverine talking to someone about the year 2099 and get, like, you know, his reaction and see what this guy who's already lived 200 years comes away with. But, you know, then, like, it's stupid that then going, well, and then the X-Men fight some Hulks. And that's the part that I go, wow. But yeah, I sort through it. I get all the action in place. I usually try to just think, okay, if I was Jerry Bruckheimer and drunk, what would I do?
Nice. What was your image series where you had the spies? Was it The Circle?
Yeah.
Any you know, has that been traded, first of all?
It never got a trade.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It was one of those books that everybody loved and nobody read.
Understood.
My joke was that it was exactly how it felt to be Tim Minear doing a Fox series, because anything that man puts on Fox is canceled 2 weeks later, but everybody loves it.
Wonderlands, absolutely. Or Wonder Falls.
Yes.
Absolutely, but, man.
You know, maybe someday we'll go back to it. Ian Hossfeld, the artist on it, and I are discussing a new creator-owned thing that's really different from that, but I think will be a lot of fun to do.
Very cool. Well, that's what I was going to ask. What non-Marvel stuff is peaking in the future?
Still cranking along with Red Sonja.
Excellent.
Heading towards issue 50 with that.
Will we see any more Dynamite stuff from you beyond Red Sonja?
At the moment, there's nothing in the cards, but that's not a no by any stretch of the imagination.
Will we hear about, and I don't want you to tip anything too early, but do you have more things coming up that might be announced in the summer convention season?
Yeah, there's something that I just talked to, I think I can say his name. I talked to Mike Oeming today about a project he's involved with. It wouldn't be Mike and I working together, but we'd both be involved with it.
Oh, cool.
So I'm not sure when that will come together or be anything we can talk about at all, but it's pretty cool.
Excellent, man. Who is your editor that you have had for Ms. Marvel, for example?
And
who
are your... Steve Wacker.
Okay, so it is Steve. Okay, that's right, and you mentioned that earlier. All right. And you said Bill is the editor for the 2099, for 2099.
Yep.
And for Sinister Spider-Man, who are you?
Is Tom Brennan.
Okay, very cool. That's very interesting. Now, when you say that you were talking about how, you know, you kind of had to work on character and stuff, who, you know, did someone lean on you? Did someone give you the right words to figure out, you know, what you were doing wrong? I mean, where were you getting kind of the best advice in terms of how to meet those
Honestly,
challenges?
Honestly, it was working with Bendis a second time.
Okay.
Because it was, you know, writing Spider-Woman with him was, I really felt like I was writing the parts that exploded and he was writing humanity.
Okay.
and like, I would go, oh, I really want to do this scene with this thing, and I would take a hack at it, and I would write this three-page thing, and he would send me back his draft, and it would be half a page, and it would be twice as powerful as what I had written. And so, like, there was some learning there, but writing is just one of those jobs where you don't quite realize you're learning something until you go back and look at how you used to do it.
Sure.
And then you're like, oh, crap. Somebody other than me saw that.
Well, you know. Yeah, but, you know, also, don't, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It's...
I'm giving you that totally insecure writer voice.
Absolutely, man.
Exactly how you feel when you see it.
And yeah, and a lot of readers don't pick up, you know, that you're really picking your nose when you were writing that scene, you know.
I always remind myself that Frank Miller wrote a scene of Stiltman walking up to a window to get a briefcase from someone. I tell myself it'll all be okay.
Excellent. Very funny. We, again, we were talking when the glitch happened, and we were talking about just how crazy technology has gotten now and stuff, and you're a big Twitter guy.
Yeah.
And it's been fun. And I think to your advantage, and I try to do the same thing, you're teasing, you know, different books that you're working on. You mentioned the X-Men, 2099 X-Men fighting 10,000 Hulks and stuff, and I happen
yes.
I happen to catch that this weekend, and that was cool. Are you how have you been getting responses from fans? I mean, are you hearing from fans now that you've been writing steadily for Marvel for a couple years now?
Yeah, and I've got a good chunk of Twitter followers who are there because they're fans of the comic books.
Sure.
And, you know, want to know what's coming up next or whatever. I had a guy the other day who was like, I just read the new Ms. Marvel, and I can't believe you killed her, and I'm completely offended.
Of course.
And I'd reply to him like, you know, I'm sorry. I promise I didn't do it to make you mad. But then, like 2 hours later, and this is the magic of Twitter, is you just say stupid shit into the ether.
Oh, yeah.
Like 2 hours later, I'm just like, man, you know, Red Bull over ice really doesn't work. Like, not 10 seconds later, I get a reply from this guy. You know what else doesn't work? Killing Carol Danvers.
Oh, Jesus. Let go, man. Wow.
I enjoy it, though, because if you're that into it, I'm doing something right.
Oh, absolutely.
back to the character thing and learning about it was, and again, it's Bendis. It's going to sound like I'm kissing his ass.
Well, but he's been your chief collaborator, I think. You know.
He's been my Yoda.
Yeah.
And he's about as tall. But anyway,
it's very true.
when I realized how much I cared about the characters and powers, and that I wasn't just reading it because I was enjoying the superhero action and the detective work, was when Dina had been kidnapped, and Walker walks into this bathroom, and there's this blonde corpse hanging from the shower rafters, and you think it's her. And that is the only time ever in reading comics that I went, but that was this big moment that I realized I didn't care about her because of how she solved crimes and when she pulled guns and when she cut off that guy's hand and all that. It was, I cared about her and who she was as a person, and that was making me go, you know what, there's a lot that I need to be focusing on that I'm not. And, you know, another big learning tool for me was I sat down last summer and I watched the entire run of The Wire.
Great show.
A fantastic show.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And honestly, if you're an aspiring writer, watch that show over and over and over again and pay attention to the structure and pay attention to how characters do things with three lines of dialogue, and you know everything about them, and you don't see them for six episodes, but you know where they are and you know what's going on with them and you know what they're thinking. And I've had to lean on some of those lessons with Time Storm because I literally get two pages for some characters. And you've got to be able to go, okay, here's what's happening with Wolverine. Okay, we'll see him in 30 days. Let's go. And it all came from watching The Wire and just learning how those characters were being brought back into the fold and taken back out again.
I'm always curious, too, about the computer side of writers. And you coming from the computer and then going to books as opposed to a lot of the comic book writers now trying their hand at computer games and stuff. Do they what challenges have you heard from some of the guys that the Marvel guys that are writing computers? Do they ever come to you and say, hey, how do you handle this or anything?
I've been asked questions by a couple guys like, hey, what am I getting myself into? and really, I think like a good 80-90% of the job is it's your comic book job, only now you're not working in panels anymore. You're writing a screenplay.
Okay.
And if you're not writing animation on the screen, you're still conveying story information to the person. Like if you're doing the hero that's traveling from point A to point B and he's going to have a monologue, it's really not that different than writing the monologue of the comic.
Okay.
You've got to learn to have fewer word count because it takes longer to say things than it does to read them. And you've got to take that pacing into account. But other than that, there's not a lot different. Then when you get into, well, we need 20 ways for Spider-Man to say this door is locked, that's a different ballgame.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from the guys, and it is those different scenarios when you reach a maze situation where the character can go a bunch of different ways.
The nice thing is the designers know how many ways there are to go, and what you do with them is you just go, I need a list from you of how many things you need each character to say about what. And then it really is just going down a checklist. And it's, you know, I need 8 ways to say that Dr. Octopus wasn't hurt when I punched him. Yeah. And it's brain melting. You're sitting here at 4 a.m. going, I don't care anymore.
Are any games coming up for you that you can talk about?
Let's see. I write things and then they don't get released for a year or more.
Sure. No, I understand.
It takes you a little bit. which one of the versions of Ultimate Alliance 2 I wrote some additional stuff for.
Oh, very cool.
They already had their story in place and everything. They needed like two or three extra missions, and they hired me to write the dialogue for them, but it was all stuff that they already knew what the story was they had to tell. They already knew everything. It was really, we need a Marvel ear, so Reed Richards sounds like Reed Richards.
Sure.
So I did a little bit of that. I handled all of the dialogue for the G.I. Joe game that's coming up.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, I read the movie script last year.
Wow. Well, all right. We'll see.
I got to say, the commercials look neat.
All right. Fair enough.
And I think that's all I've got coming out right now, because I did, Web of Shadows was out last year. Yeah, I think that's the only games I've got coming up right this minute.
Did you work on the first Ultimate Alliance?
No.
Okay.
That was all C.B. Sobalski.
Oh, no. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This woman that does voiceover work for the radio station I work at in Chicago, she was Spider-Woman.
All right.
Which kills me. It cracks me up. She used to be on All My Children, Tasia Valenza. And she's very sweet and really funny and a hell of a voice actor.
So yeah, back when we were doing the Ultimate Spider-Man voice directing, we're sitting there in the studio and, you know, I'd listened to all of the tapes as they came in, but I hadn't paid attention to who anyone's names were or anything. And people come in and you're just thinking, man, you look familiar. And a lot of voice actors do character acting stuff and will be on a sitcom for one episode. And that was it, was you're just sitting there going, weren't you, you seem familiar.
That's hilarious. What about the motion comics that Marvel is working with? Are you going to figure into that at all?
I have not been in that discussion yet.
Okay.
So far as I know, they're just doing Spider-Woman at the moment, but hey, there's a lot I don't know. So.
Well, you mentioned you got something coming up with Oming that will be interesting, so I'm sure you guys are talking.
Yeah, I got a couple. Creator-owned things. Starting to talk to artists. Starting to, you know, decide if they're actually viable to try to put up on their feet yet or not. So hopefully over the next year, here a few more things come together.
What'd you think of Watchmen?
You know, I enjoyed it. It was, what was interesting was I was really waiting to see what my wife's reaction was, because she knew nothing but the trailer.
Okay.
And like I suggested to her before, hey, I think you'd like this if you read it, but you know, haven't shoved it down her throat and said, read this now. And I really was curious if she was going to like it or not, because she hated Sin City. And
interesting.
And
okay.
And it was just like, I'm like, man, that was really faithful to the book, and I know this is really faithful, and I don't know if it's going to work for her. But, you know, let's go see it. And the most telling thing for me, as the movie was ending, it occurred to me, it's been 2 hours and 45 minutes, and she hasn't gone to the bathroom. And she can't get through an hour and a half movie without going to the bathroom at least once.
Okay, all right.
And so it ended, and I said that to her. I go, I was going to ask you if you thought it was good, but I noticed she hadn't gone to the bathroom. She goes, this was really good. I have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, that's great. No, that's really shocking.
Yeah, so she really enjoyed it. I mean, she was talking about it today. Like, all right.
That's cool, because I saw it in a big group of people. We went to a midnight showing on Thursday night, and actually Mike Norton and Tim Seeley among the people that were with us. And, you know, all the comic book people, we all loved it, but we would, like, talk to the various people who hadn't read the book, and this was their first exposure to the story. And it was mixed, and we had some people that really hated it and some people that really loved it. And I could see it when you said about Sin City, my litmus test is V for Vendetta, and asking people, if you saw it, what did you think of it? And if they liked it, then I recommend that they see it. But if they didn't like it, then I say, you may not want to like this because it's just not, it's not your typical, you know, happy superhero fare, and there are more people in grays than there are just a good guy and a bad guy.
I will say, I walked out going, that needed to be half an hour shorter. I couldn't necessarily sit down and point at it and go, this is what you should have taken out. And I flipped through the graphic novel today just to kind of refresh my memory and like look at it and everything. And it's incredible what the feat that they pulled off with that movie. Like, how much they got in. They really cut a lot out, but the spirit of it stayed.
No, I agree with that, man.
And I'm like, it's really impressive. Like, it's a good study of editing, just going, wow, how did you pare your story down? I still think for the general viewing audience, even if it had been 20 minutes shorter, 15 minutes shorter, it would have been a big deal, because it kept feeling like it was building, and then it just wasn't going anywhere. And that's built into the original story, too, though, so I'm not quite sure how they would have beat that without drastically changing something.
No, I understand, and it's different when it was coming out monthly and, you know, being able to appreciate those quiet moments as opposed to an almost three-hour movie. And have you seen, did you get the DVD for the Black Freighter? And
I have not yet.
I
got to check it out, because, I know somebody who did concept art in it, and he's been all excited.
Oh, that's cool. I'm looking forward to, I haven't watched the Black Freighter part yet, but I did watch the Under the Hood part.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. It really was like, you know, this like 1970s Charlie Rose episode.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, and they did a good job, and it was very cool to see all the actors participating and cooperating, and, you know, it's, again, I like Sin City and like V for Vendetta. For that audience, I think it's a great experience, but I can see where a general audience wouldn't be that crazy about it.
Yeah, that's what I said last night, was I fully understand why there are people who did not enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
Like I can't debate with them at all, because they're right. But at the same time, I was like, that was pretty great. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
The only thing I thought where people are picking on it too hard is when they're like, oh, the soundtrack was too, like, on the nose. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. So the Pavlovian, you know, bell rang too loud for you?
Yeah.
I'm like, come on. I'm like, you know, they're not only trying to do it for you, they're trying to do it for an uninitiated audience.
I will tell you, though, that when they start playing the song from Shrek during the sex scene... That was a little...
No, I understand. Well, that was another thing, too. I felt like this is really my first opportunity to talk about the film. I thought the Silk Spectre, taking out the Elektra complex, and as overtly as it is in the book, I think, diminished her character, and Malin Ackerman becomes just the chick in the movie.
Yeah, there was some stuff with her that I felt kind of like she was watered down, and I wasn't sure how much of it was that they'd taken things out and how much of it was... that she maybe just wasn't that great an actress, but looked really good in the costume.
No, I believe me, yeah, those things crossed my mind as well, and it's just like, I don't know. Although I got to tell you, I saw her in person at WonderCon. Wow. Act any way you want, dear. Just keep talking. That's all right.
But, I mean, there are bits in there where, you know, Dan looks like, I mean, he looks like the comic.
Oh, hell yeah.
I went, oh, my God, you're not doing anything special in this shot, and it looks like him.
No, absolutely. No, I really think Haley and Morgan and Patrick Wilson were the three best actors in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Crudup, I understand, you know, I thought he did as best as he could with the character, but also, you know, when you have a CGI body like that and you are pretty much just a voice, you know, there's only so much range that you can show. And also that disaffected quality of Dr. Manhattan's, which came through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's just, it's a limited role that, again, maybe the book, because you have time to let the story breathe, you can appreciate him losing his humanity. And, you know, as opposed to the 6 minutes where they hit every beat of his origin,
mm-hmm.
you know, it would have played, you know, it plays better, obviously, when it's a 22-page story.
I thought it was nice, though, that we heard... It was that disaffectedness in his voice that I don't think I ever read when I was reading the book. Like, I understood he wasn't connected to us, but, like, when he's telling his origin in the book, I don't know that I ever heard that in the voice then. It sounded like, I think I always read it more as this guy's like, oh, man, and then this happened. And instead of just hearing him go, yes, and then this happened, is like, I think that maybe made that a little more powerful even in the short amount of time there was.
Now, I've seen you at a few conventions and at signings.
I'm sorry.
No, that's good. No, really. And really, it was great. It was great seeing you at Wizard World, for instance, last August and stuff. But how does it feel going from the anonymity of computer game writing to, you know, dealing with fans, and both good and bad in the case of the Ms. Marvel guy on Twitter?
No, he was good.
Okay.
it's entertaining. I went from, you know, dealing with a team of 10 designers to sitting in front of a room with 500 people in it doing my first Marvel panel. That was the funny thing, was that was my very first panel, was one of the big Mondo Marvel things at San Diego Comic-Con. And what do they fit in that room, 300 people?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're sitting there going, oh, my God. And then the very next panel I did was, like, you know, like 50 people. And I'm sitting there going, oh, this is nothing. Somebody else is going, wow, there's a big crowd here. So I've never had the right perception of anything.
Well, what's your con schedule like this year?
This year I'm not doing much. The other day I agreed that I'd show up at Wizard World Philly.
Okay.
I might end up at the Chicago show. I'm not sure.
Great. I hope so.
But everything else I'm kind of blown off, because I did everything last summer.
Really?
And my wife was in school full time last summer, and I was doing this all summer long, and just no. This year we're taking a breather.
I don't blame you. No, that's cool. Well, and I hope, you know, we got the Reed Industry Chicago show coming in 2010 as well as Wednesday, mm-hmm. So maybe I'll come out for that.
I got to convince somebody there that I'm related to them.
Yeah, you're here. Exactly. Very good.
Because I got to think there's a good in there.
There you go. You weren't in New York then?
I was not, and I completely regretted not going to New York. Okay. Just like I'm right now regretting not going to Emerald City next week.
No, I understand, man. Yeah, and I'm not going either. I'm going to the FX show in Orlando, and that's going to be a good show. But I'm missing Emerald City as well. And sounds
like because I loved the Emerald City show, and last year I was deathly ill and wasn't about to get on a plane.
And this
year, my sister's first kid is due next weekend, so I was like, I don't want to be out of town for that. So everybody blame my sister.
Well, we'll see in Philly then, and hopefully we'll see you in Chicago this year.
Yeah.
Very cool. And, you know, I enjoyed and looking forward to the changes in Ms. Marvel. I would say that you've got a good handle on character because I meant to say this earlier. I think, like I said earlier, glad to see Rick Mason in the book and am enjoying his characterization. So I'll be watching his story with eager anticipation. Very cool. And Time Storm 2099, that'll be very cool to watch as well starting this month. And then, of course, in June, Sinister Spider-Man. And more announcements later in the year about
if
Brian Lee.
Lucky.
Very cool. Well, dude, I will be following you on Twitter, and people can do that, and they'll let them just look up your name and bug you.
Twitter.com/Brian Reed.
And do you have a blog, don't you?
Yeah, savagebreakfast.com. Itself a Watchmen reference.
There you go. Very good, man.
It is. He says it's part of the Black Freighter comic book. As he's eating a live seagull, and he refers to it as his savage breakfast.
Outstanding. Ew. Damn, man. Oof. Well, very cool, Brian. Congratulations, man. I think you've grown a lot in the last couple of years, and I know other fans feel the same way, and we're looking forward to more new stories from you.
Well, thank you very much.
That's Marvel writer Brian Reed. Make sure you check out all of his books, Time Storm 2099, Ms. Marvel, and coming soon, The Sinister Spider-Man. Don't forget, I will be at the FX International Show next weekend. That's right after Tax Day. That'll be the weekend of the 17th of April. And in Orlando, make sure you stop by and say hello. Lots of great creators are going to be there. Marvel is very much represented with guys like Matt Fraction, John Hickman, Olivier Coppiel, Jim McCann, and a host of others. Also, some of my favorite indie guys like B. Clay Moore, Jeremy Hahn, Seth Peck, Billy Tucci, Michael Golden, Mark Texaria. Lots of great names that are going to be there at the FX Con, including Leonard Nimoy, touting the new Star Trek movie. So that'll be a lot of fun. If you're in the Florida or Orlando area, make sure you stop by the FX International Show the weekend of April 17th. For the details, go to fxshow.com. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. John Suntress saying thanks for listening and reminding you that you can find Word Balloon all over the internet. We're at iTunes, at wordballoon.com. If you have any questions or comments about the show, feel free to email me, john@wordballoon.com. You can Twitter me as well and follow me on Twitter. I'm John Word Balloon. And, of course, any questions or comments, make sure you check out the Word Balloon forums over at the Jinx World message boards and also at wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.